This is episode number 669 of the Secret Identity Podcast, and today in our new segment, we're going to talk about The Flash Season 2, Iron Man and the new Marvel Universe, and Christopher Lee's passing. Our reviews this week will be Green Lantern number 41 and Batman Beyond number 1. This week's BoobTube and Big Screen Bonanza will feature Kung Fury, Arrow, Turn, and more. And finally, this week's creator spotlight is Enrica Jang of Red Stylo Media, who I sat down with at Special Edition NYC to talk about their new Kickstarter project for 27, a comic anthology.
Are you sure this is legal?
I don't know.
It's fun though, isn't it?
A family full of midgets is not considered kids! That's a gang!
Bond. James Bond.
I am your father.
And welcome everybody to Secret Identity. This is Brian Letendry here as always with the lovely, the talented, the beautiful Matthew A. Herring. How are you today, sir?
Doing well, and I'm still, honestly, this is Thursday that we're recording. We got back from New York Sunday night. I'm still feeling a little of the after effect.
You know what? It's funny you mentioned that. We didn't talk about this in the first episode, but I definitely have been tired all week.
Yeah, this was an exhausting show. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of driving. When we never really got a chance to relax and catch our ground anywhere. But I think for me, what ended up happening was it was one of those things where coming home Sunday, I'm like, oh, you know what's great? I got all of Monday. I don't have to do anything. And then I realized I had a very important interview Monday at 7 o'clock. So I had to get up early because it was in Windsor, Connecticut, drive down about 45 minutes. That went amazing. Then I thought, you know what? After the interview, I'll be fine. Then I forgot that I had to do a book appearance at a bookstore in Broadbrook, Connecticut called Book Club with three other artists or writers because there was a field trip that was going on and there were going to be 50 kids there. And the point of this was they got to talk to authors about the creative process of writing books,
which is awesome.
That was a ton of fun. Except, and when I walked in there, it was so funny because I
saw your picture of you with a shirt and tie on.
Yeah, I had the shirt and tie on because I came right from the interview. So I'm also thinking maybe I'm going to start wearing the shirt and tie to the book signings again. I did that for a little while.
It was a good look for you.
I kind of liked it. Thank you. And then
showing off the new hairstyle too.
Yes. And then I had sunglasses on because I was so exhausted. And then as I'm sitting there, I'm like, I bet all these kids, and they're probably third and fourth grade. They're all looking at me like, this dude thinks he's cool with his sunglasses. But
right.
My eyes were so red.
Future's so bright, he has to wear shades.
That's it. Or that dude's drunk, or he's high or something. So I had to take the sunglasses off, went next door and bought a big tea with 6 sugars in it. But it was an exhausting Monday, but man. And then I ended up having to work at the comic book store too that night. So a lot of craziness, but a lot of fun and one of those things that when we think about the craziness and what we do and running around to shows and stuff, I really honestly wouldn't change it for the world.
Well, and speaking of Special Edition NYC, I'm going to skip ahead to one of our little news bites for this week. Brian Michael Bendis and David Marquez. I don't know if David Marquez was there, but Bendis was there.
Yes.
And there was a panel about what's coming up for the Marvel Universe and things like that. And one of the things that they talked about on that panel was that Brian Michael Bendis and David Marquez are going to be on Invincible Iron Man moving forward. And that Iron Man is going to be a central figure in the Marvel Universe moving forward, and it is still Tony Stark that's under the armor, but that Bendis and Marquez basically have a plan for him, and that plan is to make him sort of front and center in the Marvel Universe. And I read that, and I was kind of bummed out.
Yeah.
Because I guess in my head, I had thought that when Iron Man came out as a movie, and he became such a hot property, he was elevated in the Marvel Universe.
Strictly from the movies.
Sure.
Yep.
Strictly from the movies. And not that he wasn't a popular character before or not that he didn't have his own book and all that kind of stuff, but he became like a huge player in the Marvel Universe. He was the head of S.H.I.E.L.D. for a while. Yeah. You know, you had War Machine showing up for a while. You had the Iron Man director of S.H.I.E.L.D., in fact, I believe was the name of the book for a while.
Joining the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Joining the Guardians of the Galaxy. It seemed like everything was Iron Man. And I don't know if it was Tom Brevoort or somebody else made the comment during that panel or about that new status quo with Iron Man that you know, what Spider-Man was in the 60s and 70s to the Marvel Universe, that's kind of what Iron Man is today. And that was just like so disappointing to me because in my mind, Spider-Man is and always will be the flagship character of the Marvel Universe. So there's a part of me that will never accept any character as the flagship character of the Marvel Universe, just in the same way that I believe that Superman is the flagship character of the DC Universe, which of course he isn't anymore. Batman is.
Yes.
But in my mind, Superman still is. And that's why it's so frustrating to see, you know, when he's not written well, because in my mind, he's the flagship character. But I guess that I'm kind of bummed that Iron Man is going to be the focus continuing on forward, because I was kind of ready for the next thing.
Yeah.
And I didn't think it was going to be more Iron Man. Now, having said that, you have Marquez and Bendis, who I'm sure will do a amazing job on it. And one thing you know about Brian Michael Bendis is when he gets really excited about a character and he is going to take on that character, he puts everything into it.
Everything he has,
And so you saw that with Avengers. You saw that with everything that he's done. And I like Brian Michael Bendis's writing. I think sometimes he writes for the trade because he sort of tells these decompressed story arcs, but I like his take on characters, and I certainly, I'm sure, will love his take on, you know, Iron Man. However, that kind of bummed me out a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, and I just thought we were moving on to highlight other characters in them, and I'm sure we will, but that just kind of threw me. I guess I didn't think that Iron Man was going to figure as majorly in their plans moving forward, because it seems like Robert Downey Jr. isn't going to be around forever playing Iron Man. They're sort of passing the torch with the movies now.
Yep.
I just didn't think that Iron Man was going to be that big of a deal moving forward, but apparently he is.
Yeah, it's you can definitely see the movies dictating what everybody does, and like you were saying, I think the Iron Man, sort of the excitement about Iron Man was over after the second movie. I really think that everybody's love, I mean, not that the third didn't do well.
Sure.
I had the Blu-ray upstairs. I never even watched it. So I'm going to have to watch that. But you're right. I was looking at the fact that it seems like Black Bolt is getting a ton of play. And I'm thinking, you know, yes, that's going to be the new X-Men or the new mutants in the Marvel U, but yeah, Iron Man is kind of an interesting choice, and I'm hoping that the next interview you see, somebody's going to say that about the Hulk. Like, oh, I think the Hulk's going to be the central character in the Marvel Universe, and I'm hoping that everybody who's doing a certain book is going to say that, because to me, if Iron Man is the central character, I'm not really that crazy.
I'm just blown away by the assertion that Spider-Man is not the flagship character of Marvel. Like that is such a foreign concept to me that I can't even wrap my mind around it.
Yeah.
Like, how is Spider-Man not the flagship character of the Marvel Universe?
Yep.
How, in any scenario, like, I don't understand that. And I hope it's not because of the movies and because they don't fully own Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And even though he's going to be showing up in Civil War, he's still not a character that they have complete 100% control over, because that is where I would draw the line forever. Like, you know, it's already a bummer what you're doing with X-Men and Fantastic Four, but to marginalize Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And they're not going to do that. They just brought Miles Morales into the Marvel Universe. I don't know what their plans are for Peter Parker in the future, but it's going to be very interesting to see what happens, because now you have this whole new group of spider characters that are coming in with Spider-Gwen. I'm not sure what the future of Silk is going to be, but she's an interesting character. And Miles Morales is now part of the Marvel 616. So you have the potential to essentially have Peter retire and have a family or do whatever, and Miles to take the mantle as Spider-Man, or there to be a group of spider characters who sort of fill that void. I don't know what the plan is for them, but I just hope it's not something that's being affected by the movie stuff, because Spider-Man's the one character that you don't mess with.
Yeah.
He's Spider-Man.
Yeah.
He's the flagship character of the Marvel Universe.
And you know, it's what, if you call it what it is right now, if you had to pick the flagship character or the selling point for most company or the too big right now, Marvel, it's going to be Deadpool. And DC, it's going to be Harley Quinn. Those are 1 and 1A of the two biggest characters right now. But they're not characters that can sustain a line. They can't sustain the line forever. They're certainly not flashes in the pans, but they are the flash characters, the characters that you need a quick boost, throw Harley Quinn in there. Harley visually, you know, we were joking around at Special Edition going, hey, did you see that Harley Quinn? Did Harley Quinn walk by, or a Deadpool? Because they were everywhere. That's the biggest costume for both characters. And, I it's sad when you said that about the, kind of minimizing Spider-Man's role because of the movie thing. It was like, oh yeah, I kind of forgot about that.
Yeah. So anyways, interesting stuff. Now I'm at least intrigued to see what the plan is for Iron Man, because I really had no interest in reading more Iron Man comics moving forward with Bendis on it. I mean, I'm going to have to take a look at it. I think we'll have to talk about it, but that was an interesting conversation. Other news this week, I read an article about the fact that there was a casting call put out for a character for Flash Season 2 that's going to be a love interest for Barry. And the character's name, at least at this point, is Wendy. So the speculation was that it could be Wendy Harris, formerly of the Super Friends.
Oh, I was thinking that too.
And who in the comics went on to become Proxy, who was a protege of Oracle. So that could be interesting. The other speculation was that that's just a temporary name that they're putting on the character, that it could be Patty from
the new series.
The new series. But in any case, it sounds like the Flash will have a new love interest in season 2, and it will not be Iris West.
And the cool thing is that you said the greatest thing that you could hear, Flash season 2.
Exactly.
And we got that. We'll talk a little bit in the next episode, the next couple segments from now about iZombie, because we saw the season finale of iZombie, and it ended with, you know, iZombie season 2 coming in fall. It's like, thank you.
Yeah, well, I haven't watched the season finale yet.
Oh.
But I'm excited that that got a season 2 as well.
You want to talk about a show that you have fallen in love with all the characters? This one will wipe you out.
Yeah.
Wipe you out.
So, good stuff on that front. What else did I want to talk about? Oh, the Inkwell Awards are going to be at HeroesCon June 19th through the 21st. If you go to secretidentitypodcast.com, you will see that there is a post up that you put up today about that. Of course, our good friend Bob Ahman is just the ambassador for inkers everywhere and has done such a great job with the Inkwell Awards. And we are very happy to have been a part of that process for many years now.
I think since the beginning. I think we've been there since the first votes.
And it's something where when you see inkers not getting as much attention anymore, when you see colorists not necessarily getting as much attention anymore, the fact that Bob is out there still making sure that people know the contribution that inkers have to the artwork that you're reading on a weekly basis, you know, that you're enjoying, is really important stuff. And so I love that they are partnering with HeroesCon to do the award ceremony and stuff like that. That's awesome. So if you're going to HeroesCon, you will be able to see the Inkwell Awards in person.
Very nice. And we're going to end the news. I don't want to say it's necessarily a sad story, because anybody that can live to the age of 93 and be very productive from beginning to end is an amazing thing. But we lost Christopher Lee, who for you and I was looking through 206 movies this guy made. 206 movies, countless TV appearances, but he is somebody that has touched on every genre that you and I love. He has been involved in most of the franchises that you and I love. But some of the quick facts that I found is that he served in the RAF from 1941 to 1946. Now, being in England during 1941 to 1946, 45 was when World War II ended, but he was in a little thing called World War II. And that says a lot right there about this guy's character. He was married to the same woman since 1961. That in any stretch of anything is, I mean, she's now a widow, which is really weird to think that I believe she's also 93. And she was a Norwegian model or Finnish model. I'm not exactly sure which one. But he, to me, is one of the greatest actors of our time. And he passed away at the age of 93 this week. And in an interview, he described what his favorite movie roles were. His favorite horror role was 1973's The Wicker Man.
Oh, yeah.
He says that was one of his greatest horror role. And then in 1998, Jannah, which was a political movie, and I want to say it was about Mandela. I'm not 100% sure. So
it wasn't Star Wars?
No, it wasn't Star Wars. Oh. But we'll get to some of those. Did you know, Brian, he recorded 2 heavy metal albums?
I did know that, and I believe the last one was recorded when he was 90.
Yes, Charlemagne, and it's the Shakespearean play, I believe it is, metalized.
And if you haven't heard him, and he's also done metal Christmas carols.
Yep.
He did The Little Drummer Boy.
Yep.
When we say metal, we're talking like thrash death metal.
Yes, yes.
Like, this is heavy.
Yep.
Heavy metal. This isn't like hair metal, glam stuff. This is like serious metal. And he's got quite the singing voice.
Yeah, he does. It's not a shtick. It's not an act. He's done a bunch of opera albums. So
and that really tells you all you need to know about this dude. This dude was metal.
Yes. He received a Spirit of Metal Award from Metal Hammer Magazine.
Thank you. That's what I'm talking about.
And you know who gave him the award? Tony Iommi.
Right?
So you've got the godfather of metal giving this guy an award. I mean, that's...
unbelievable.
It is amazing. I was on YouTube after listening to Armored Saint all day long today. That new album is fantastic. I started flipping through and listening to some Charlemagne. And there's some stuff that's a little... it's like, all right, that's kind of a little hokey, but holy crap.
Yeah.
The band that's assembled on that and hearing him is fantastic. So he also... He probably is more well-known for the Hammer horror films that mm-hmm. he did, which was a company that was basically chugging out horror films in the 70s. And he is one of the few people that has played most of the major monsters. He played Frankenstein. He played the Mummy, but mostly known for his Dracula.
Yep.
Because he was kind of an imposing, good-looking guy and could kind of pull off that kind of...
well, and just his glare. I mean, you see that in every role that he's ever done. Yep. You know what I mean? He's got those eyes, man. That yep. when they look at you, they bore through you.
Yeah. Other than the Captain America TV series that he was the villain in, he was in Airport 77, which is one of my all-time favorite disaster films. He was in James Bond, The Man with the Golden Gun, where he played Scaramanga, who he was the assassin hired for $1 million a hit. He was in Return to Witch Mountain. Do you remember those Witch Mountain movies from Disney?
Yeah, they remade one with the Rock.
Yep. He was in 1941, which is one of my favorite comedies.
Yes.
He played Count Dooku in the in Attack of the Clones and
the trilogy.
Yeah,
right?
the trilogy. Yeah, he was in Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. He got both his arms chopped off.
Yep.
By Anakin in that one. And then he was also somebody in Lord of the Rings. I don't remember who he was.
He was Saruman.
Yes. So you've got a guy that has touched upon...
I mean, talk about two enormous franchises yep. that were happening at a similar time. You've got Lord of the Rings and you've got Star Wars.
Yep. You've got James Bond. You've got heavy metal. You've got war movies. You've got a war hero. You've got Christopher Lee, who... what an amazing life. And
I mean, talk about a full life that yeah. dude led. And I mean, basically, he basically did everything.
Yeah. Yep. And the fact, too, that... I apparently he died a week ago, and his family tried to keep it hush hush because yeah. they wanted the family. And I completely understand that.
Sure.
There's the problem with the World Wide Web is that everybody wants a piece and a part. But you know what? They wanted it quiet so they could mourn, do what they needed to do, and then let it out there. So last week there was the rumor that he was dead that went around. And then everybody today started posting on Facebook and people like, oh, no, it's a rumor. I think he died. And then my daughter came in and said, Dad, Count Dooku died, but he died last week, and everybody thinks that it's rumor, but that's what happened. So they had a death certificate picture online, which is really sad that we need that now.
Who is out there demanding proof of when this guy died?
I mean,
again, the internet is ridiculous,
yep,
but that is it's a big loss for fans of a lot of different genres.
Yeah.
But again, as you mentioned, 93 years old,
yep.
led an amazingly full life. It's hard to, you celebrate that. You
yeah.
know what I mean? You absolutely celebrate
that. I wasn't sad when I saw that. I thought, holy cow, that guy lived in it. And again, he was making movies all the way to the end.
Sure.
Crazy, crazy, crazy.
Yep. All right. Well, that's your news for the week. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we will talk about some comic books.
Now, just because you buy your books online doesn't mean you have to sacrifice the comic store experience. Now, many of us don't live close enough to a shop to call our own, and that's where DCBS can help you. Not only do they offer incredible discounts, but Discount Comic Book Service has the giveaways like Free Comic Book Day and Power Rings. And in the slightest chance that you have a problem with your order, DCBS is fast to make sure you're satisfied and very happy. So join the many Secret Identity listeners who have made the switch by going to www.dcbservice.com and tell them you heard it here at Secret Identity.
And we are back to talk comics, and you are going to start us off today with another book that is in the new 52.
Yeah,
or just the DC universe now.
Yes, this is Green Lantern number 41. The creative team, Robert Venditti and Billy Tan is the penciler, and Mark Irwin is the inker. Dave Sharp is the letterer, and Alex Sinclair and Tony Avina are the colorists. You always, in a Green Lantern book, you need to mention colorists because they really bring a lot of the stuff out that really needs to pop. And I can't even tell you what had happened to Hal Jordan in this. This is a book where you are almost getting a brand new Hal Jordan. I was six pages in and I'm like, I don't know what's going on. I don't know who this guy is, but holy crap, am I into this story? And we start out with basically a war world kind of place where people are placing their bets on what is going to happen in this battle where you're going to send some dude in there to fight some huge monster. So you see a whole bunch of aliens that are all throwing and they're spinning the wheel. And apparently when you spin the wheel, that's who you got to fight. So they spin the wheel. Everybody's freaking out.
Seems fair.
Loving it. Yeah, because the wheel picked this creature, which is called a Kreek. And this thing is insanely huge and crazy. And the guy in there that has to fight him is almost a pacifist, where he's kind of like, look, I don't know why I'm in this. I got to do something about this. And he's sitting there trying to reason, saying that they're all screaming, going, you're going to get it. I got 50 bucks or 50 creds that say you aren't going to make it. And he's like, you'll not sully my royal cape, you filth. And he's just kind of like, to the end, trying to hold some sense of anything. So as this creature comes in, he throws his cape up. The creature comes on him, and then all of a sudden you see something green and glowing jetting out his back. And the guy's like, what was that? And then when the thing crashes to the ground, he is holding like a green arrow-like sword that he has no clue about. And everybody's like, a blade? And then everybody freaks out going, you're not supposed to bring a blade into the death match. What are you doing? This is completely against the rules.
Breaking death match rules?
Yeah. So everybody's screaming, this is rigged. And he's like, I don't understand what's going on. So everybody's screaming and hollering. They want their money back. And they're like, hey, it's a game of chance. You got to let us have this. And they're like, well, what chance did we have when you rig this whole thing? And you're seeing somebody with kind of a cloak kind of walking in. Meanwhile, the guy is now in prison for cheating. And the guy's like, it's a lucky day, Virgo. And guy in there's like, there's no such thing in this cesspool. Everything here is about favors. I don't know what's going on. I don't even know where that blade came from. And he's like, well, you know what? I don't gamble, but I'll let you know that that was from me. And you see that he's got a Green Lantern gauntlet on and it's glowing all over the place. And he creates this ring of keys, puts the king in, ring in. He goes, I'm here to take you home. And he goes, home. He goes, did my uncle send you? And he goes, well, nobody really wants you, but you matter to me right now. And then you see him take off this mask and it's like a young dude with like really, really, really long hair. And then as he turns around to get him out, you got all these aliens that are kind of the prison guards all showing up going, you know what? We're just gonna have to kill you too. And you got a full page shot of him just creating these amazing images of monsters and things and tentacle creatures that wipe out these dudes. And you see that it is Green Lantern, and he takes down the creatures, the guys, and then he gets the guy and he starts going out, and he goes, oh, hey, wait a minute. You know what's pretty interesting about this? He goes, you just freed me from jail, but you are the one who's the most wanted man here. So they get into a ship and they take off. But before this guy comes up to take out Green Lantern, and Green Lantern creates a green helmet around his head and then cocoa butts the dude, knocks him out. They get out of there. And they're back on their ship, but first they have a little duel inside the thing. They get on the ship, they fly out. And as they fly, he's got him in a prison. He's got one of the guys in a prison, in the prison thing set up. And he's talking about the fact that, you know what, I know who you are. You're the Green Lantern. There's a warrant for you and that thieving glove gizmo. And you beat one of our senior officers to mush. So you've got yourself in some pretty big trouble. Now, as I'm reading this, I'm looking going, I don't even have a clue if this is what Hal Jordan this is, because he's a younger guy, he's a little brash, he's not wearing the typical uniform. I thought it was very interesting that he's got a gauntlet. I thought that was really cool. And as he's taking him to a planet, it looks like he's taking him to Oa. He starts freaking out going, I don't know what's going on. And then the guy in the prison goes, are you going to listen to me now? And he goes, what is he talking about? And he goes, they're not here. And you turn the page and you see that Oa, the Green Lantern home, the corpse are all gone, and then you see that it's disappeared. So right out of the gate with this one, I don't know who this Hal Jordan guy is. I don't know. This is not anybody recognizable, but this did not do anything to me but make me enjoy this. The art was great. The story was great. Vendetti was the one that was writing it before the convergence happened. Yep. And I believe Billy Tan was drawing it as well. So this is the same team. It's a completely different look, but I really, really, really enjoyed this. And it's so far, it's been really interesting to see the chances that DC has been taking. Depowering Superman, making Green Lantern a little bit different if this is, in fact, still going to be Hal Jordan. But a fantastic book that if you are a Green Lantern fan, you're going to love it. If you haven't been reading Green Lantern, give this one a chance. But since I don't have a code for it because it's a DC book, Brian, I'm going to give you the code AVX Little Marvel book that I reviewed in the last episode. And of course, I didn't peel this off. So as we're doing that. So if you go to marvel.com/redeem, you will find it. Type in the code FMCESC33VVAZ. That is your code. First person gets a copy.
So you talked about DC shaking things up, and we're going to start with another book at number one, Batman Beyond. And there's a pretty big shakeup in this one. You have Dan Jurgens writing it. You have Bernard Chang doing the art, Marcelo Maiolo doing the colors, Dave Sharp on letters, and the editors are Dan DiDio and David Pina. Now, I did not read Future's End. I had started reading Batman Beyond, but I sort of fell off somewhere along the way. And then in Future's End, there was a big twist because my understanding is that Terry McGinnis died.
Mm.
So the Batman Beyond that we knew from the cartoon and then had gone into the comics had died, and the suit has been passed on. Now, as we open up this series, you have Neo Gotham at the Wayne Powers Complex for Deterrence, and you see that there is a bunch of the Jokers with a Z, the Joker gang that has broken into this place. And they're going in there and they're talking about needing to get in to this particular device, the Veil. And they have beheaded one of the guards and they have taken the hand of another and they are using their eyeballs and their fingerprints to get into the place they need to go into. And they get into this place and they disengage the security system, and it talks about the Veil being disengaged. And as soon as they do that, all of a sudden Batman shows up. And Batman Beyond starts fighting these guys, and all of a sudden you see that Alfred is talking to the Batman in the suit. And I don't know if Alfred is just an AI program or if there's an actual Alfred, but I'm assuming it's the AI program of the actual mm-hmm. suit, because Alfred was a pretty old dude back in the day. So Alfred is basically saying, Batman saying, yo, Alfred, we get thrown decades into the future, and the best we can do are Joker cosplayers. And he says it's Joker's Master Tim.
Oh.
Tim Drake, the Red Robin of the New 52, is the new Batman Beyond.
Wow.
And he has been thrown into the future after getting the suit, I'm assuming, from Terry, maybe on his deathbed. I don't read it. Our listeners will have to let me know. But he is now thrown forward into the future, and he is here, and he is battling these guys. And what you find out is that Brother I is this program that has now taken over everything, basically like Skynet.
Yes.
And so, which is that the OMAC program?
Yeah, Brother I was created basically by Bruce Wayne to keep track of the superheroes. And
so,
it's kind of gone a little haywire.
It has gone very haywire. So what's happening here is that Gotham is the only place in the world that is still shielded from Brother I because of Bruce Wayne creating this program called the Veil. And if it gets deactivated for a certain period of time, then Brother I will be able to detect Gotham and hell will rain down upon it. And so Tim has to basically rearm this thing before the timer runs out. And you have one of the Joker gang who gets away, and she's running with this, whatever the key is to turn this thing back on. And he's saying, you know, why are you doing this? Why would you want Gotham to be destroyed? And she says, my family died in New York. The whole world is dying. Why should Gotham be any different? Why should the people here be privileged? And so he ends up disarming her, and he takes this thing and he gets it back in time, just in time to put the Veil back up and keep them cloaked.
Mm.
And he's like, okay, well, at least we did that, but I need to find out what the heck is going on with this current time period. I'm obviously not from here. I have to find somebody that I can talk to that will let me know what's up. I don't even know where all the heroes are and what the heck is going on here. So he goes and visits this woman by the name of, what is her name? Nora Boxer. And he goes and visits this woman, Nora Boxer, because Nora Boxer is now the guardian of Terry McGinnis's little brother.
Okay.
And so he goes there, and the little brother's name is Matt, I believe.
Yep.
And you find out that Matt became sort of in the custody of this woman when she started looking after him when everything started going to crap because everybody was dead and Terry wasn't around. So she started looking after him. And he's kind of bitter that he didn't get the bat suit. So you see that he does not like Tim wearing this new bat suit. He's not really talking to him. He's not really sharing any information with him. And he's kind of bitter that he wasn't the one that inherited Terry's suit. And he's telling, you know, him begrudgingly, Nora took me in except for when Terry was around, but he was usually busy being Batman. And Tim's trying to say, you know, I think he'd be pretty proud of you. You know, you look just like him, you know. And he's like, yeah, whatever. And he's talking to Nora and he's saying, look, I got to find people that knew Terry. I heard that some of his friends were being held prisoner. And she says, yeah, there's this guy, Max Gibson, maybe a few more. They're at a place called The Lodge, which is a ways away from here. If you can break them out, maybe they can give you information that you're looking for or whatever. So he decides to go after them and he goes to New York, which has been completely pretty much destroyed. You have the Statue of Liberty that is half submerged in water. The city is completely falling apart. And he goes there and he's kind of blown away because he said, you know what? I told Terry that I was going to prevent this future from happening. And I get here and it's already happened. And I don't even know where any of the heroes are or anything like that. And so he gets near this facility, which looks like it's a giant prison. And he's saying, I can't tell if the people in there are guards or prisoners. You know, I need to get a better look. And as he's getting a better look, he says, is that? And it looks like a silhouette of somebody that might be Superman. But when he turns around, the thing that has approached him is basically a lobotomized Superman whose lower body is a giant like spider robot.
Yep.
Underneath torso, and he's got a cannon for an arm, and he's basically talking like he's a computer.
Yeah, that's what I stopped reading, or I never read that one. I think I read the first few issues, but that was almost what everybody was becoming.
Right.
Like these robot.
Yeah, so he's just like a robot sentry now, and he's coming after Terry, and they're fighting each other, and Terry has to like throw a bunch of feedback out of his suit in order to short circuit this version of Superman. And when he does that, he kind of short circuits his own suit. And he's like, crap, what am I going to do now? And he looks and he sees that there's a bunch of new prisoners that are being processed into the lodge. And so he basically goes and gets in line and gets brought into this place. And as he gets brought in, he immediately, you know, gets grabbed by somebody in the prison yard. And the person saying, you know, what does he say? The only thing that can help us now is tech. And the guy grabs him and he's like, you better back off, buddy. And all of a sudden somebody says, stop it. And someone says, leave that guy alone. And they say, why? Do you know him? And you turn the page and it is an older version of Barbara Gordon. And she says, yeah, I know him. His name is Tim, more commonly known back in the day as Red Robin. And that's how the first issue ends, with him recognizing Barbara Gordon in this sort of prison situation. So very cool stuff.
Yeah.
I did not read what happened to Terry McGinnis, but I love the fact that Tim Drake is the new Batman Beyond, because if there was one thing that the New 52 had too many of, it was Robins.
Yes.
You know, as soon as you brought Damian on the scene, now you've got Tim.
You had four.
And now you've got Damian, and now you've got Dick, and now you've got Jason Todd. It's like, there's too many.
Yeah.
And the whole Red Robin thing to me was ridiculous from the beginning. That was the dumbest character ever.
Yeah.
Red Robin.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
It's a good hamburger chain.
Exactly. Not a good variation of Robin.
Nope.
So totally cool with this, because now you have another Robin who's growing into the role of Batman, except it's Batman Beyond. Yeah. So totally cool. Really like the first issue. We'll definitely be reading more of that series. So I think it's worth checking out.
Yeah. I'm going to have to probably pick that one up too. And Bernard Ching, the artist, is one of the only people I know that has a Montreal Expos baseball jacket like mine, because we were at Boston together years ago, and this is before we were doing the podcast. I was walking out, and he started screaming to his wife, hey, that guy's got my jacket. Not like, hey, we have the same jacket. He thought I stole it, because
who else in the world,
else, especially in Boston, would have
that ridiculous jacket?
Yep. So that was pretty funny.
So there you go. That is going to wrap up your comics for this week. We're going to take a break and come back and talk about some television. The rest of the comic publishing world may finally be arriving to the party, but Drive-Thru Comics is the one that started it all. The first downloadable comic shop is still leading the way when it comes to digital comics. Featuring hundreds of publishers, excellent prices, and top-notch customer service, Drive-Thru is a great experience all around. Another thing that sets DriveThru apart from a lot of other digital comics platforms is this. When you buy a comic, you own it. You get a watermarked PDF file that you can read on your laptop, your tablet, phone, or any other device. You choose how you enjoy the comics you buy. So head over to DriveThruComics.com today, and on your way to checking out, download a free issue of Secret Identity. And we are back to talk about movies and TV, and we are going to start with Kung Fury.
Holy crap.
Because people have been asking us if we watched it, and I know you watched it today. I watched it when it first was posted. I had seen the Kickstarter project and, you know, the trailer that was out for a long time. And then, of course, the David Hasselhoff video that came out for it. But the full 31-minute movie is now free to watch on YouTube. So if you haven't seen it yet, we posted about it on the website. You definitely need to go see it. Kung Fury is essentially a love letter to the canon 80s action movies.
Yep.
So if you grew up watching, you know, Braddock and stuff like that, and Cobra, then you will be very familiar with everything in Kung Fury. And it is a CGI heavy love letter to everything from the 80s that we grew up loving.
And the CGI heavy, you could almost look, if you're making a movie now and said that, it's a distraction. This is the charm of it.
Yes.
Because it's bad CGI.
Well, you have
the CGI you would expect back then.
VHS tracking issues.
Oh my gosh.
The opening action scene. And there will be people that don't even know what that is.
Yep.
And so that was awesome. It starts off in an arcade, and the arcade machine turns into... So it's basically about this cop, Kung Fury, who is called into action when Hitler... who is also a kung fu master and is played by Kung Fuhrer. He's the Kung Fuhrer. And he is played by one of the guys from Saturday Night Live. And I can't remember what his name is.
Oh, I know which one. Yeah, but I know. Yeah.
But he's from Saturday Night Live. He plays him. And he's essentially going to, I think, take over the world. So he has to like travel back in time to basically take out Hitler.
Yeah.
But it begins with an arcade machine coming to life and killing everybody in the area, and so he has to get called into action. And the action is so ridiculously over the top. Like, a cop stops a group of guys who are skateboarding, and they put the skateboard under his car and step on it, and it sends the car jettisoned hundreds of feet in the air, at which point they shoot at it and blow it up.
Yep.
So that's the type of movie we're talking about. Like, everything blows up, everything is crazy over the top. It's the story of an ordinary cop who was turned into Kung Fury when he was struck by lightning and bitten by a cobra.
At the same time, so they cornered a guy because he's telling his origin. I don't work with anybody.
He was a regular officer.
He's a regular officer, and it's where it gets so 80s-ish, and this is like right out of the Lethal Weapon movies where, you know, he looks at him, he's like, you know, you're the best partner I ever had.
Yeah.
And you know what? You're more of a, you're not like just my partner. You're like my father. And as he says this, the guy that they chased into the corner that was now handcuffed has a sword and slices the dude right down the middle. And when you see the body split apart, you see the tongue wagging as the body hits the ground. So, and then it was all of a sudden at that time, he was the cobra struck by lightning at the same time.
And he had visions of basically monks studying martial arts, which is how he then became knowledgeable of all of the martial arts and everything. So he becomes Kung Fury. He's the only one who can harness the power.
Yep.
And so from that point on, he is essentially a super cop who has ridiculous, you know, prowess and powers. And so then the movie just goes completely crazy from there. I mean, you have him fighting arcade machines that have come to life. You have him fighting through an entire army of, you know, Nazi and super soldiers.
That is the scene to me that really sells the movie, because you have what it is. It's set up almost like a video game where you're getting that one dimensional him running across, going back, running back and running across. In the background, it's a crowd of Nazis that it's almost like the Flintstones where it is, you know, when they're running through the room, it's window, couch, chair. It's the same thing.
Right.
And you just got Nazis that are throwing
And it's
their
like they're at a rock concert because Hitler was just talking up on the podium and they're all cheering and everything. And so as he's fighting people in the foreground, that's what's happening in the background. I mean, there's so many ridiculous jokes like that. And some of the one-liners are just absolutely crazy. And he talks like Cobra. Yep. So the woman's like, what are you going to do? My job.
Yep. And then they want to give him a partner, Triceracops.
Triceratops.
Who is a Triceratops?
He's literally a Triceratops.
He's got a Triceratops head in a blue uniform.
Yes.
And he speaks very regal. It's really nice to meet you.
Uh-huh.
And then you've got Hacker.
Hacker Man.
And Hacker, he's like, I need a time machine to go back in time. Well, you know what? If you give me a couple minutes, I may be able to hack the mainframe.
I can hack you back in time. At which point he puts on a Nintendo Power Glove and then proceeds to type in basic commands on a computer that then hacks him back in time. And he rides on a keyboard.
Yes.
You know, back in time. And then he gets hacked back in time too far to the area of, to the era of,
it's like the Norse gods.
What is it? Laser raptors.
Yes.
That I thought those went extinct thousands of years ago. Just like, it's ridiculous to sit here and try to even describe this movie.
Yep.
All I will say is if you grew up in the era of the canon movies and you grew up in the 80s and you enjoyed watching ridiculous 80s action movies on VHS, this is the movie for you.
Yeah. This is, I thought it was only a trailer and then I looked down going, holy cow, I have a half hour of this.
It's half hour.
And you get a little cartoon thing in there too.
Yep.
I mean, this just has everything. Not to mention the end of it, you get a musical, a brand new song sung by David Hasselhoff.
Yes.
The Hoff. Hoff 3000.
Yeah. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
It's and apparently it went over so big with people at the Cannes Film Festival that there may be a feature film coming.
And they cannot change a thing.
No. It's absolutely ridiculous and pretty amazing. So we watched that this week. I also have been watching Arrow because my son and I had watched this first season of The Flash. We had started watching Arrow on Netflix and watched the first two seasons, but we did not catch this season because I don't have a DVR. And so they are replaying, much like they're doing with The Flash, all of the episodes of season 3 over the entire summer.
Yep.
And so we have been watching them. So we just watched episode 3 of Arrow for season 3, and it was the one where they went to track down Oliver's sister, who I can't remember the name of, Athea. So they went down to track down Thea, and we find out that Thea has been studying with Malcolm Merlyn because when she left Starling City, she was tired of people lying to her. She was tired of being hurt. So she basically said, make me into the type of person that doesn't have to worry about that anymore.
And you know what? It's funny because when you're saying it, I already know what happens.
Yeah.
And it's like, holy cow, I completely forgot about that. Yeah. So, you know, she's tired of people lying to her. She's got a couple other good ones coming her way.
Yeah. So she, and then of course you have, Laurel, who is kind of starting to pick up the mantle of her sister in the wake of her sister's death. So you have the seeds of her becoming Black Canary here. Now she's also sort of learning how to fight and stuff like that. So that's all happening now. And then Diggle got sent there to track down an operative of Argus. And so it was cool. There was a lot of action in the episode and a lot of stuff going on. And you also have Ray Palmer, who is now in charge of Queen Industries, and the whole subplot of him and Felicity sort of getting to know one another and how he runs the company so differently than the Queens ran the company and stuff like that is pretty interesting. So I'm still really digging season 3 of Arrow. And I heard mixed reviews of the season overall. Some people didn't like it as much as the first two seasons, but so far it's been pretty awesome.
You will have that because there's a lot of up and downs. But as we were mentioning earlier, I think when The Flash really started to hit its stride after the first episode, you started looking at Arrow going, ooh, this isn't as good as I might have wanted it to be, because The Flash, unfortunately, for everything around it, has set a way too high benchmark. Because if they came to me and said, we want you to do a superhero show, that's the benchmark you now have to pass, and it's impossible.
Well, so, I think what may happen now is that with Legends of Tomorrow happening and with The Flash doing its thing, I think you might see Arrow get back to basics in the next season.
Yeah, you're going to have to.
And that will be better for that show.
Yeah. So one of my favorite series just hit its season finale, and that's Turn. Turn is on AMC. It started out as the non-zombie replacement for The Walking Dead. It kind of took in its time slot. And what Turn is it's about the spy ring during the American Revolution and how a group of spies really had such an incredible network. And being a James Bond fan and loving history, I wasn't even aware of half the stuff that went on. But when you start seeing characters and hearing things and seeing all the things that were going on, you you start to realize this was all true. And of course, I'm going online to find out about certain characters, because in this season they introduced Benedict Arnold.
Right. So you're like fact checking everything that's happening.
So you're
on
like,
the show.
You know what? Benedict Arnold, we all know what he did. And for Americans, Benedict Arnold is what you would call somebody if they're a traitor, because he was a guy that was an American general, got pissed off that he wasn't getting all the credit that he deserved, and decided he was going to sell his wares, not as a spy, but he completely defected over to the British. And I was curious as to see what happened to him afterwards. So as I'm reading the history about him, I'm like, holy crap, why did I just read that? Because now I know what happened to the woman that kind of brought him to Boston or to Philadelphia. And now I know what happened to the British general that was in charge, or colonel that was in charge of British intelligence, that used this woman to get Benedict Arnold there. You see these crazy love triangles that I was kind of curious going, I bet they kind of added that in for the show. This is exactly what happened. You had a British officer who was in charge of British intelligence for the British during the revolution. And the woman that he loved had a relationship with Benedict Arnold, the friendship. He said, can you use your friendship to get him to Philadelphia so we can maybe talk to him about what is going on? We know we can turn him and blah, blah, blah. And what ended up happening was he ended up falling in love with the colonel's girlfriend and married her, and this destroyed the British colonel. So I'm reading all this stuff going, oh, well, I guess I know what's going to happen to this guy. And he was my favorite character in the entire show.
That's what you get for reading history.
Yeah, you should be reading history. But a lot of this stuff, it's an amazing, amazing series. You didn't watch iZombie, so...
No, so we'll talk about that one next week.
Yeah, but the show that I've been watching, I've been binge-watching right now, is a show on
Netflix.
Netflix, and it's called The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. I believe that's what it's called. I can't read my writing.
I believe you are correct.
And it's Ellie Keegan, is that her name? Who was on The Office. She was Aaron the secretary.
Uh-huh.
Kind of goofy, kind of crazy. The premise of this show, and again, what I was a little surprised about on Netflix is that this is a show that could easily fit into a network show. There's no swearing.
I think it was supposed to be, but then it got picked up by Netflix.
Yeah, there's no swearing. So it's a show.
NBC might have passed on it.
It's built for a network. I mean, this show is about these four women that in like the 1980s or 90s go underground with a cultist. And it was a doomsday cult. So they're the women. And all of a sudden they get rescued out of this thing. And their nickname is the Mole Women of Pennsylvania or something like that. So they were on the Today Show. The first episode has them getting out, them experiencing everything. They set up a mole woman fund so they can give them money and stuff. And they're talking about going back. And she's like, you know what? I'm not going back. I think it might have been Ohio. I'm not sure exactly where. But she's like, I'm not going back. I'm staying in New York and I'm going to make my way here. And it's just the craziness of missing 20, 15, 20 years of your life and trying to get everything back. But there is so much heart to it. And Ellie is, she plays it, she is such a goofy character. She's a goofy woman. It's a very charming show. It's one of those shows where the ensemble.
My daughter actually watched an episode and was like, Dad, you should watch the show. You would like it.
The first two episodes were kind of earth building, ha ha ha, that's kind of funny. The third episode, I was peeing my pants laughing out loud, and I'm like, I gotta keep rewinding this because I just missed six jokes. The cast in it is great. You have Karen Kane, who is, we know her from Taxi, but she's Oswald's mother on Gotham. Karen Kane?
Oh, okay.
Whatever, yeah. She was Latka's wife on Taxi. You have the girl who was in Ally McBeal, who was also in 30 Rock, Jane Krasing, no, not Dungeon. That one. She also did the orange juice commercials.
Yep.
She's in it, and it's a crazy, goofy bunch of characters. She's a maid for this woman that has no touch of any reality because she's so rich. But definitely check that one out. After Daredevil and you get your Netflix set up, you got to watch something else because it's too much of a pain to flip that button to go back to the real thing. So check out The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
I will do that. And we are going to take one final break, and then we're going to come back and you can check out the Creator Spotlight.
For the best in comics, gaming, sports cards, and toys, it's got to be Most Excellent. Providing the best service and coolest stores for almost 20 years, Most Excellent will be the only stop you need for all your needs. Not only is Most Excellent the official local comic shop of the Secret Identity podcast, it's the local shop of those who like service, quality, and no-hassle shopping.
So check it all out at www.mostexcellentcomics.weebly.com. And on eBay, it's one word, Most Excellent Collectibles.
Alrighty, and this week's Creator Spotlight is someone who I sat down with at the Special Edition NYC show. Enrika Jang is someone who I had met because I had seen their Edgar Allan Poe anthology. Red Stylo Media is the publisher. I had seen their Edgar Allan Poe, but then I was very excited about The House of Montresor.
Yes.
If you remember that, that was a book that I was raving about. And last year at Special Edition NYC, I ran into Enrika at the show and we did an interview and we've talked and I've been following what those guys are doing. They do yearly anthologies. They did one on Edgar Allan Poe. They did one inspired by the music of Queen called Killer Queen.
Holy cow.
And the one that they're doing this year is called 27, and it is inspired by the 27 Club in music, which is artists that died at the age of 27.
Janis Joplin, Jim Morrison, yep. Jimi Hendrix.
So imagine...
The guy from the Stones.
Imagine different creators' takes or stories inspired by artists that were part of the 27
Kurt
Club.
Kurt Cobain now?
Yes. So this interview, as you'll hear her describe, some of the artists that were featured, but also just the sort of idea behind it. They are running a Kickstarter campaign for this project right now because they want to do a hardcover edition.
Yep.
And of all the anthologies that they've worked on, like, this is the one to do a hardcover edition
yes.
of. And it is something that I've always appreciated the anthologies that they do because they're all right in my wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Music and horror. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. And Edgar Allan Poe and stuff like that. And so they do fantastic work over there. Enrika is just super passionate about all of their projects. But this one you'll hear as we talk how excited she is about this project. And I'm excited about it. It's a book that I definitely cannot wait to read. And I will put I put a story up on the site this week about the Kickstarter project, but I will put links in the show notes as well as to Red Stylo's site so you can see more of what they do and some of the other series that they have going on in addition to their anthologies like House of Montresor. So it is they're a great publisher, and this is a project that I am super excited about. So Enrika Jang, your Creator Spotlight for this week. That is going to do it for this episode of the Secret Identity Podcast. So for Mr. Matthew A. Herring, this is Brian LaTenry signing off. Have a great rest of your week, and I will talk to you, and Matt will talk to you in a few short days.
Bye-bye.
Alrighty, and this is Brian here on day two of Special Edition New York City, and I am here with Enrika Jang of Red Stylo Media. How are you today?
Very well, thank you. I've got coffee now, so I'm better.
And you bought me a coffee, which is really, really nice of you, and we were talking about how today is like a three coffee morning because we went to bed very late and got up very early this morning, and so it's funny because yesterday morning at 10 o'clock, it was like a stampede of cattle into this place, and this morning, you could tell everybody's moving a little bit slower.
A little gingerly, too.
Yes.
Like, they got into some trouble.
Yeah, they got into some trouble last night. They're just making their way back in. They're here and present and accounted for, but they're not ready to function yet.
And we are in Hell's Kitchen, so I'm thinking there's a little bit of channeling the Daredevil stuff.
Yes.
I wonder how many people fell off of roofs last night as they were trying to pose.
Or battle criminals in an alley, and maybe got beat up a little bit. Maybe a couple sore ribs or something
Which
like that.
Which is a rough
day,
no matter what.
And any day of the week, and whether you're in Hell's Kitchen or not. So we are here at Special Edition NYC. You've got the Red Stylo booth. The thing that I'm super excited about, and we'll talk about in a minute, is your new anthology 27. But last time we talked, I think, was at Special Edition NYC last year, and we were talking about House of Montresor. So how is that project moving along?
Oh, that is... I'm so glad you asked about that. We have part two up on Comixology now. We've been getting some really, really great reviews. Room Org magazine covered it, which was really cool. This week, as a matter of fact, we're going to be releasing the sketch for the cover for part three.
Awesome.
And Jason has some really fun preview art to show from the third issue. So we're really excited to share all of that, and it's coming.
Yeah, and I picked up the hard copy when I was here last year, but Comixology, going through that, how has that been for you, for Red Stylo? Has that worked out well for you guys?
It's given us a lot of really great exposure, but one thing I've learned about any big platform where they're selling comics, as soon as you're up on those platforms, it's immediately when you get pirated.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to come to terms with the fact that we're out there now, but if it's worth stealing, then that's a good feeling too. It's so good, people need to steal it.
And you cannot stop the pirates. It's so funny that you mentioned that because I did a Google search. For whatever reason, I was writing something for a blog post or something about a book that I had written, and I did a Google search, and on the first page, no more than four results down, was the place that I could find a pirated copy of my book online. And your first reaction is like, oh man, that's really disappointing. And then you're like, but I guess if people are actually out there looking for it, that's kind of
glowy.
A cool thing.
You right. get to be a little glowy about yeah. that. That's fine.
It's fine. It's a little bit bittersweet. So yeah, that's kind of a bummer. But the other thing that I wanted to mention that you guys are doing, and I'm always fascinated to hear about from other creators, is you have also gone the Patreon route. So tell me a little bit about like the decision to do that, and also how that's gone so far.
Okay, well, we launched that July last year. That was actually very soon after Special Edition last year. I looked at the Patreon model. What I really love about that is you're getting in front of people monthly,
yep.
and there's an onus on you to make sure that you are delivering to these people who are sort of throwing in a little bit to support yep. you. How it works is people pledge maybe $1 here, $2 there, and they choose to either do it monthly or per update. So yep. we chose per update.
Okay.
And the model for Red Stylo is because of our annual anthologies. It's a collection of comics with many, many teams of creators. We yeah. had 16, 17 different stories in the last anthology. This is an opportunity to each time put a new team on showcase
right.
and put them front and center and deliver their story and talk about that. So it's a wonderful way to also build our audience.
Yep.
I found that our digital sales were a little bit flat. Like you can go to a show and get in front of people and talk and sell your book. The goal is to sell your book
Absolutely.
When you're not standing there. But digital is such a gift in terms of reach and having a platform like Patreon to continue to get in front of people, build our digital audience. From a business standpoint, it's money that we're not seeing before. It's operating income,
yep.
and for a very small company like mine, that's gold.
Yep.
That's gold. We have some wonderful patrons on Patreon. It's been a really great experience, and it's a good community
yep.
as people sort of learn about it. So.
And I love the approach that you've taken to that, too, because the Patreon thing, and we've thought about that for Secret Identity. I've thought about
Absolutely.
It for the writing podcast and stuff, and it's always... I'm one of those people who like has to see how all these other people are doing it. So I'm always fascinated by how other creators are using it or publishers are using it. And as you mentioned, I think with the anthology series that you do, it does lend itself to this sort of continued almost carousel of creators that can get a little time in the spotlight. And what I've liked most from what I've seen about the Patreons that work well is that community engagement, because not only are you connecting directly with your audience, but you're building evangelists for your brand, because now they're out there and they're talking about, yeah, it's worth it to support these guys. And I think for them to know that their money is going to help the overhead, because that's a part that we don't often talk about, is the overhead, what it takes to actually put these books in front of people, what it takes to even put a digital comic together. I think people just have it in their head sometimes, like, that the creation part of this stuff is very low cost, and it's not. And having that support, I think that really creates evangelists for the brand, because they know that they're helping keep this company moving forward.
Yeah. Well, it's funny how, as creators, we're a little bit shy to talk about how much things cost.
Yep.
Because the idea is that, oh, well, if we were successful, then we'd have money working
sure.
in. So we don't want to tell the numbers. We don't want to share. What I have found, and that has been a pleasant surprise, is when you do share your journey and your struggles sometimes, people then see the value, how much work you're putting into it. And it's not just, you know, it's like the pirate thing we were just talking about. Content, there's an expectation of free content.
Yep.
And we're all a little guilty, or like blushing
sure.
a little bit about this in terms of like liking this free content, getting sick of ads, but at the same time,
yep.
things are free for ads and all that other stuff. But when you do, as a creator, when you do share what goes behind all of it and how much heart and the real people that are behind each thing, that's a story that connects.
Yep.
That actually gives me a little bit of faith in humanity, that people
yes.
actually want to hear that story. I know, whereas I thought, oh, nobody wants to hear that. The other thing I really like about Patreon is you're asking for a very small investment.
Right.
There are different kinds of crowdfunding, and we're dipping into sort of exploring the landscape of it. But Patreon is great in that we're only asking for a little bit, $1 here, $2 there, and then people see.
Yep.
that come together and where it goes and what's
Absolutely.
Happening and what's produced from it. So something about seeing what goes into the mix
yep.
makes it taste better.
And one of the themes that I've been talking about with other people all weekend long, I interviewed Brad Geiger yesterday, I talked to Buddy Scalera, and we were talking about how and they've done a lot of how-to stuff with the comic book school or how to make web comics and stuff like that. And consistently I find that the creators who are sort of speaking to people like normal human beings and connecting with them as someone who maybe, like them, is going through this creative process and experiencing the ups and downs. And a lot of your audience may be aspiring comic book makers, aspiring writers, aspiring artists, and to see that you're going through this process, you're talking about your experiences, that's helpful to them. And I think that's the cool thing as a creator, is seeing how much people get from hearing the behind-the-scenes stuff and the creative piece, because they're learning from your experience while they're also helping support you through something like Patreon. And so it's sort of this nice feedback loop.
Yes, absolutely. And it does feel good. It feels good to help the other creators that you see in the community.
Yep.
And you're creating a relationship with the people who are helping you. Right. And as a creator, it's a very humbling thing, but also you want to please them. You want to give them something
right.
for what
sure
they're
worth their money.
Investing in for you.
Yep.
So I love that part.
And you mentioned that you're always sort of looking to try different things and to figure out, different paths to go in getting stuff out in front of people. So now that's a good segue into the new Kickstarter that you just launched for the next anthology, which is 27. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that and about how the Kickstarter is working?
Oh, wow. How it's working? We've been up for 2 days.
Yep.
So get back with me in a week.
A lot of stress, right?
Oh, my gosh. I'm shaking it's awful. No, actually, it's great. We launched a Kickstarter 2 days ago for this year's anthology called 27, a comic anthology inspired by music's infamous 27 Club. Very long title. But there are a lot of famous music artists that died at the age of 27. Jim Morrison, Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, Kurt Cobain, and Amy Winehouse. And
yep.
That's my generation.
Sure.
And that's actually touched my generation of fan. So the topic was sort of spoke to me in part of my formative experience. We had never done a hardcover book before.
Yeah.
We've done 5 anthologies. Last year was Killer Queen. We did a trade paperback, very successful trade paperback for that.
Yeah.
This year we wanted to kind of raise the bar and do a premium hardcover. So our Kickstarter is to raise $6,000 to make 27 a comic anthology a hardcover book. There will only be 1,000 signed and numbered copies, and once they are sold out, they are sold out. But it's a thank you for all the people who have supported our anthologies over the years. But then also, it's the first time we've ever tackled a project this big. I've got 54 creators on this book. It's going to be over 200 pages of art. And then these iconic, this inspiration for these iconic figures and this incredible sort of conspiracy mystery around the number 27.
Yeah, there's so many parts of that project that are fascinating. Obviously, like, just the theories that go into the 27 Club and everything like that. But one of the things that I love about a lot of the projects that you do is that they are woven with into music. Because obviously music is a huge influence. And for me, as someone who, I'm a child of the 80s, I am a huge, music has informed every single part of my life. Music is so involved in all of my writing and everything else that's one of the things that I've really appreciated about a lot of the projects that you do, is that there's this musical element to them. And this one is obviously very tied into music. And so I am very excited to read people's takes on all of these members of the 27 Club, and because it's so wide open and they can sort of come at it from every angle, it's just going to be a great experience. And if you're going to pick one to do a hardcover of, like, this is the one I'm excited that you're doing a hardcover of. So I feel like that's a perfect fit. And I know that you're promoting that Kickstarter project and also the book here at the show. What has been some of the conversations that you've had so far? Are people really excited about the concept?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And there's such a long list.
Yeah.
There was no way we could possibly have included
right.
everyone. But this is a multi-generational project, too.
Yeah.
Giving my age away, but, you know, when I was in high school, Kurt Cobain
yep.
passed. I loved Amy Winehouse as an artist, and then she
yep.
passed. So this was, again, my generation of this visceral kind of reaction. For the very first time, we're including essays
yep.
because music
it's
touches
personal.
Our lives.
Yeah.
Oh, and what they've created. What
yep.
they created and passed on to us inspires
yep.
so much emotion and memory. And so it's such a passionate
yep.
project, visceral project for people and the creator, especially for the creators.
Yep.
And then as an artist, the idea of our mortality and the idea of
absolutely.
Our legacy and, you know, got an entire, all these events across the country, comic events where we're, you know, artists creating these modern myths.
Yep.
And it's, I mean, not to get too metaphysical about the whole thing, but I feel this emotional connection to it all. And that's what people seem to be responding to as well. So.
Well, and just the idea that there's going to be this nice hardcover volume that will be the legacy of this project is going to be awesome. So I know we will be promoting the Kickstarter, and we'll put a link in our show notes to where people can donate to that. And also check out your Patreon, because like you said, there's so many creators that you're working with now that you get to sort of spotlight through that. I think that it is there's something for everyone over there, no matter whether you're a huge music fan or not a huge music fan. The Poe anthology that you did was fantastic. I'm a horror fan, so you guys kind of hit to all my fields at Red Stylo. It's like, oh, this is a horror one.
For you. Yeah, it's all for you.
It is. It's like, oh, they're doing another project for me. This is Total S. Oh, the 27 Club. That's great. And you know, so there is, I think, something for everybody in the work that you guys do. Now, for those people who are not here this weekend and can't come by the table and pick up the trades and things like that, where's the best place for them to keep up with what you're doing?
RedStylo.com is our website, REDSTYLO.com. That has our store. It has the links to our campaigns. And we've actually started something new this year. We're doing the Patreon, but as a gateway drug to our comics. And we're also offering a free webcomic on the website. And Shakespeare Shaken is the anthology that we're rolling out stories weekly.
Nice.
So that you'll see a new comic from us, give you a little taste, and then it'll show you a link to our Patreon. But blazing right on the top of our website right now is our Kickstarter campaign, and that will link directly to our campaign.
Yeah.
And you'll see what we've got planned. Some good stuff.
Like I said, I think you guys have something for everyone, and I think if people want to see their support directly impact a project, then they need to check out the stuff that you guys are doing. So I appreciate you starting your day off here on Sunday by doing the quick interview, and I hope that you have a great rest of the weekend, and we will definitely see you probably later in the year at New York Comic Con.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. The book comes out at New York Comic Con.
Awesome. Well, thank you for your time.
Thank you.